As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Race IndyCar podcast. On last week's episode, we discussed Kyle Larson's new drive in the Indy 500 with McLaren, but we couldn't leave it just at JR and I shooting the breeze. So we had to give Kyle a call and get him on the podcast. So up next, you'll hear JR Hildebrand, my co-host, myself, Jack Benyon from the race, and Kyle Larson discussing his new deal to race for McLaren. So, Kyle, welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast. We're enormous fans of crossovers and drivers who are willing to step out of their comfort zone a bit on this podcast. So, you personify that more than probably anyone in current motorsport. So, thanks so much for joining us. Let's quickly start by asking, now that the announcement has been made that you're going to contest the 2024 Indy 500 with McLaren, were you surprised by the reaction that you got and how big that announcement was?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I honestly, I hadn't really paid attention much to the reaction of it all. Just I was, you know, when we announced it, I was in New Mexico racing a dirt late model. So hadn't been on social media and all that too much since we announced it. But obviously, I understand that it's a pretty big deal to me. The Indy 500's, you know, the biggest race in the world. And I think a lot of fans and people have wanted me to race it and expected me to compete in it. So I think, you know, finally getting it announced, it was really cool. So just grateful for the opportunity with McLaren and Rick Hendrick especially and Jeff Gordon and everybody involved and putting the pieces together to allow me to go kind of live out a dream and hopefully, you know, do a good job.
I mean, I think jumping into a couple of things that you mentioned there, you know, even Rick has kind of spoken about being a little bit in awe of being associated with the McLaren name. What does that mean to you? I mean, does that register to you? We grew up in kind of a similar era where McLaren was super successful in Formula One. You know, what does being associated with that team mean to you in the context of going to run in the 500?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I mean, I raced for Chip Ganassi for so long that I assumed that, you know, maybe I would, you'll get my chance to compete in an IndyCar race for him someday. And then, you know, obviously have not raced with him now for a few years. And then I didn't really know where and what I would, if I was ever do the Indy 500, who I would be with. And, you know, being with Chevrolet on the NASCAR side, I knew it'd have to be a Chevy team. And, yeah, you know, they're to end up racing for McLaren and, you're getting to talk to Zach Brown quite a bit. And it's been wild, really. You know, it's kind of come together quick. And I didn't, like I said, I raced for Chip for so long. I didn't foresee it, you know, being this way, I guess, when I got to finally compete in the race. So it's been amazing. And, you know, look forward to just doing everything I can to be prepared. I was hanging out in the Chevy Center last week, and the Aero McLaren guys were in there on the simulator. I didn't know they were supposed to be there, but I stopped in and said, hey, and got to meet a handful of them. So just pretty cool overall.
That's cool. I mean, we're curious just what your level of interest is in IndyCar generally. Like, is IndyCar or maybe open wheel racing more generally something that you considered directing your career toward at any point, like when you were, maybe when you were much younger? Or is this more a case of like, now I'm a pro and I want to go win an Indy 500, so I'm taking my chance, you know, sort of now?
Yeah. As a kid, my dad, and even, you know, I don't even know where his stance is now, but definitely when I was a kid, he liked IndyCar a lot more than any other form of racing. You know, especially Indy 500. I think, you know, when I was early on, and even when I went to Indiana in 2011 to be a full-time USAC racer, I think, you know, my dad kind of probably wanted me to go IndyCar racing more than NASCAR. And, you know, things didn't work out for me to go that direction. And honestly, at that point, I think I wanted to go more the NASCAR route anyways. But I've always paid attention to IndyCar. I've definitely always paid attention to Indy 500 because it's been a race that I've known is special to my dad and, you know, really special to me too. So, it's been a race that I've dreamt of doing for a long time. And who knows, you know, I've been very intrigued by, you know, what Jimmy had attempted to do the last couple of years of, you know, being a full-time IndyCar racer. I thought that was a huge task for somebody of his age and all that. But I also really thought it was cool, and I could, you know, maybe see myself, who knows, someday down the road. I like doing new things and stuff that's way out of my comfort zone, and, you know, doing one race is out of my comfort zone, but, you know, maybe doing a season or something down the road would be cool. But the opportunity would have to be right, and you know, it obviously looked really tough to do, so who knows. But just excited about doing the Indy 500 for now.
Yeah, that's cool. My next question was going to be that if Roger called and said he's got a seat open for you on a road course, if you'd jump in, but maybe generalize that a little bit more, which is, you know, are there things outside of the Indy 500, things you haven't done yet that are on your bucket list, like other races, other types of racing that you'd either really just like to go give a try, or particular races that you think like, oh, that'd be awesome to go compete there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm really young, but I've been fortunate enough to race in a lot of big races, a lot of different types of cars. So, I mean, I've already competed in the Rolex 24 Hour at Daytona, and thankfully, you know, was able to win that, I think, in 2015. I obviously raced in NASCAR, get to compete in all those big events. I've won the Knoxville Nationals, Kings Royal, Chili Bowl. I've won a big, you know, late model race, the Prairie Dirt Classic, but, yeah, you know, getting to add the Indy 500, that was definitely the top of my bucket list of events I wanted to run. But there's also others that I haven't yet gotten to compete in, you know, in dirt late models, especially because I'm new to that. And, you know, my schedule doesn't really allow me to go race much on the weekends and that. So, you know, the Show Me 100, stuff like that. You know, I would love to win the World 100, the Dream. There's a bunch, but
is World 100, is that at Eldora too?
Yeah, yeah. The World 100, they're Indy 500 for dirt late models. Yeah. So, but there's a lot.
Yeah, cool.
There's a lot out there that I'd like to do.
Careful, Kyle, because JR is going to have you doing Pikes Peak pretty soon. By the way, this is going. I guess
I'd be down for that. That may be something later on in my career, but I'd be down.
I was gonna say Kyle needs some more open weekends.
Yeah, I know. I fill
then
up.
We,
all
then we
weekends.
Can start talking about how we'll fill in his schedule.
I feel like we could just throw a load of events out there, and Kyle's just gonna say yes to all of them. So there's not really any point doing
You're
it.
Like yes, yes, yes.
That's
you
right.
Want to drive a rally car? Yes. You want to run Le Mans? Yes.
Yep. Yep. The good thing is I'm still young, so I hopefully will have the chance to do a lot of those.
I was going to say, I think like you got to at some point we're going to map out like, all right, Kyle's going to take a sabbatical from full-time NASCAR for a couple of years while he's still a young guy. And we're going to have everything else mapped out for him to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would definitely be really cool.
Kyle, we know the 500 is a race where you need a lot of things to go your way, as well as, you know, just driving talent being the kind of main factor behind it. But just from your perspective, just going into the event, what are you expecting to be some of the biggest challenges that you're going to face?
Well, I don't really know, because I haven't driven in an Indy car yet. And obviously I think there's going to be a lot of challenges in the beginning, you know, even before I get to race. But the thing that I'm most, like, I don't know, not nervous about or whatever, but there's way more controls in the cockpit that, you know, you have to be able to adjust on and be quick to adjust on when your engineer is telling you what to do. So just honestly, like, memorizing what every button is and switch and dial and weight jackers and, you know, bar jack. There's so much, I think, in the cockpits that I don't even know about yet. So that'll be a bit overwhelming, I think, at first, because, you know, I'm used to racing. I don't have cockpit adjusters. You know, I'm in NASCAR, I might have a fan that I flip on that probably doesn't even do anything, or, you know, just a radio button. So being in an IndyCar, I mean, I think when you guys qualify, like, you guys are changing stuff down straightaways and putting them back for the corners and just going 230 some odd mile an hour and trying to stay calm enough to make the corner, but, you know, change all the dials and stuff, I think will be overwhelming, like I said. But I don't know. I mean, hopefully I'll get some decent test time in and get used to all that and be a little more calm once I get to the actual, you know, race weekend.
Yeah, I guess, you know, one of the things I'm curious about is just, you like you mentioned earlier, you've driven a bunch of different stuff over the years. I mean, you've shown kind of every time you've gotten in something new, no matter how close or far away from what you've done, you know, prior to that, you've managed to pretty quickly, like, be one of the best guys. Do you feel like adapting different types of cars has just been just sort of come naturally to you, at least in terms of the driving part? I definitely hear you in terms of learning the control systems and that kind of stuff, but just getting in and going and drive, you know, I'm curious if you can walk us through your approach to that. You feel like if there's anything that you feel like you really do particularly well in that kind of environment.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a good question, because I don't know. I guess the most recent thing that I've gotten into that's new and way different would be a dirt late model. And yeah, I mean, like, the driving part of it, I would say, always seems to come natural to me. But it's like, okay, like, I can drive at a average level, but if I really want to go out there and be one of the best, then it, like, the little details, I think, is what is the most difficult part, you know, trying to figure out the aerodynamics and how the car reacts in traffic, and just, like I said, the details, which I'm sure will be, I don't know, I hope similar when I get into an Indy car. Like, I hope the driving part around by myself will be easy, not easy, but natural, where then I could just kind of focus on the traffic, the cockpit adjustments, the pit stops, the details of racing. But I don't know. So, definitely a lot of work goes into it. A lot of studying in all the types of cars that I run, watching a lot of videos. I'm sure with the IndyCar stuff, I'll do more kind of talking to other drivers and the teammates that I have to lean on, compared to when I go race, you know, dirt car. I feel like in the past, I just try and figure it out, where, you know, with only one event and being the biggest one, I there's a lot that I need to learn quickly. So, I'm definitely going to talk to as many people as I can.
Yeah. Cool. Just quickly talking about the double, you know, do you feel like you have an advantage because, you know, a lot of the big names in the past, you're talking about those two races together. I think Tony Stewart kind of has the best, like, average finish between the two. He's like fifth at the 500 and sixth in the double, or it was the other way around, maybe. You know, you've won the Coca-Cola 600. Do you think that kind of gives you an advantage just looking at those two races on the same day?
I don't know. It's, they're both events are really tough. So, no, I don't think it gives me any advantage at all, but really, I mean, your car, just like anything, your car's got to be driving good. You got to just execute in both races. I think execution is more important at the Indy 500 just because the race is a little bit shorter and things just happen a lot quicker, where I think it's much difficult to overcome a hiccup, where in the 600, you know, you got a lot of time to make a mistake and get back up there and not take yourself out of the race. So, I don't know, but you don't want to make any mistakes. So just try and go into both races and execute them good and take the best that I can get out of each of them. And hopefully by the end of the day, I've got the best average finish of anybody who's done the double.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You mentioned Jeff Gordon and his involvement at the top of the call. I know Zach was keen to kind of point out how important Jeff had been in this whole deal as well, and just wanted to ask you a little bit more about that, because I guess when Jeff was coming up in the 90s, he was, you know, kind of worldwide famous at that point, but he had committed to NASCAR and didn't really get the opportunity that you've had to compete, you know, so much outside of NASCAR. And obviously one of Jeff's big dreams when he was a kid was to compete in the Indy 500. So do you get the feeling that he's kind of living through you a little bit here with this one? And do you feel like he's, you know, been extra helpful in all of this because he's kind of maybe helping you to get the opportunities that maybe he didn't get in the past?
Yeah, definitely. You know, after we announced it all, what was it, a couple weeks ago, you know, I just reached out and told him, you know, thanks again. You know, he was, without him, I mean, it wouldn't have been possible, because, you know, I was leaning on him quite a bit, to be, you're kind of like the middleman between me and Rick. Like, hey, like, you know, don't let Rick forget about, you know, being wanting to run the 500 and blah, blah, blah. We'd always keep the ball rolling. So anyways, you know, I thanked him again and he was like, you know, just very grateful and said that, you know, he's going to enjoy it because he's kind of, you know, living this experience through me and something that he wanted to do when he was younger but didn't get the chance to do it. So, yeah, just very grateful for Jeff, especially and Rick Hendrick and them for letting me, you know, live out a dream, but also kind of, you know, in a way live out Jeff's dream in a sense.
I'm curious just to riff on kind of this conversation with Rick, and we've gone through like a long period in motorsports, it seems like, where there's not been a lot of what you're doing, basically. And some of that's just because you're a unique guy that has a lot of cred doing a lot of different stuff. But, you know, I think from the outside, a lot of fans look at motorsport and say, oh, well, these guys are under like really strict contracts and, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's been kind of one of the reasons that we feel like maybe stuff like this hasn't happened, or just you going to run in dirt late models on a weekday, you know, before you got a NASCAR race. I guess it seems to me within Hendrick in particular, you got Jimmy going and doing his thing. And then you've got Chase and yourself, that it seemed like you guys have been given some leash to go out and do sort of a variety of different stuff. Chase has been running some dirt cars. He's been running Travis Pastrana's Nitro Rallycross. He's doing 24 Hours of Daytona. Can you just talk us through, like, what's the vibe within the organization? Like, does it feel like Hendrick is, you know, wants you guys to go get better at other stuff? Like, there's like a value proposition in that, or just, you know, that it's the reins have kind of loosened up a little bit and they're allowing it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of all of that. It did used to be strict. I remember, you know, I'm pretty good friends with Casey Kane, and you know, he spent some time at Hendrick, and I remember when he was there, it was like, you know, they didn't want him to race, and they didn't really let him race, but just a handful of times. And so when everything happened to me in 2020, and I had my first initial meeting with Rick, they you asked if there was anything that I wanted, and that was just important to me. And I was like, well, you know, I love racing dirt cars, and I want to continue to do that. And was expecting them to be like, absolutely not, you know, you're not going to be, you need to focus on this. And they said we're open to it, you know, we're changing what we used to be like. And so, man, I've raced more now in the last 2 years than I ever had. You know, last year I ran, or 2021, I ran like 96 total races. Last year I ran, I think, close to 110. This year I'll be around 100 again. So I think a big reason for it too is, one, I had a really good year in 2021, obviously winning the Cup Series championship and still doing it all. So, I mean, had we had a bad year, I probably wouldn't be allowed to race as much as I do, but yeah, we have way less on track time these days. You know, ever since COVID, we only get 20 minutes of practice. Heck, in 2021, we didn't have any practice. So I think they look at it now as a tool for us to stay active behind the wheel and getting, you know, staying sharp and stuff. So obviously there's risk and danger to it too, but I think the upside is much higher.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, switching over to your new boss, Zach Brown. We know Zach isn't shy about handing out F1 tests. He's handed out quite a few over the last year or so, good, bad, or otherwise. Or making bets with his drivers. Maybe that's a little more relevant here, where he offers big prizes. Have you made any sort of any wagering behind the scenes yet with Zach about maybe getting an F1 car or anything like that with your McLaren tie?
No, not yet. As of right now, I'm just hoping to get passes to the Vegas F1 race. That's kind of all I care about at this point. But no, I would love to. I haven't mentioned anything to him yet. But yeah, maybe that's something I'll have to wager, I guess, to him. But that would be so cool if I could get the chance to, you know, test an F1 car. But honestly, like, if I could race in Formula One someday, that would be like unbelievable and probably not realistic, but heck, who knows? I mean, I would love to, and that would be a cool opportunity.
We're definitely here for it. We'll champion your cause on the podcast for sure.
Thanks.
Before we let you go, for our listeners that are interested in NASCAR, kind of jumping back into your wheelhouse at the moment, what's it been like just adapting a new Cup car that came out for 2022? You know, I know that was a big deal at the beginning of the year last year, but everybody kind of had their own experience and their own challenges with it. So maybe you can just talk us through, for the NASCAR fans of the pod, what that was like and kind of what your expectations are for this year.
Yeah, it was obviously a lot of unknown going into the beginning of last year. Not much testing at all in the, you know, previous off season, and didn't know what to expect, but you know, once I got behind the wheel, I was like, okay, it's not too different driving. I would say, you know, it's a lot easier to spin out. So you're on edge a little bit more. It's easier to step over that line. And you know, in traffic, it's got its differences too. You know, it's a little harder to pass. The way that the air kind of exits the back of the car, you can't really position your car in the same spot to get, you know, that fresh air and downforce on the nose to stay turning. So that, I mean, besides that, and then the little bit differences on pit stops and stuff, to me behind the wheel, it didn't seem way different. So still a stock car, still heavy and slides around and things kind of happen a little slower. I would say road course stuff, you know, maybe the biggest difference just with how good the brakes are compared to what we used to have. And, you know, we have bigger tires and stuff. So more grip, which made the road courses. I feel like I always enjoy the road courses, but then it makes it feel like qualifying laps almost every lap. So that's kind of fun. But it makes it much more difficult to pass because the braking zones were way shorter. So yeah, more fun to drive, but harder to race probably.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thanks so much for making the time to talk to us. Definitely good luck with getting your Vegas tickets from Zach, because I think it might be easier and cheaper for Zach to put you in the F1 car than it would be to get you some tickets for Vegas, judging by the way that's going.
I was just
going
to say, it might be easier to get a test than get tickets to
the Yeah, and it's easy, to forget that you've got another Sprint Cup title to chase before the 500 comes around.
Yeah, I know. It is wild. We got, gosh, a year and a half almost till I get to race in the 500. But no, I'm excited to spend this year trying to prepare and be ready for the opportunity and try and, you know, take advantage of it.
Right on. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you guys. See ya.
So that was Kyle Larson. Always great to have a driver who's willing to try different disciplines and give something new a go on the podcast with all the interesting things that come with that. Elsewhere in the IndyCar world, we have a full grid for 2023. All of the full-time seats are taken. So we've had Agustin Canapino sign for Juncos Hollinger Racing, and we've also had Stingray Rob join Dale Coyne Racing in that second drive. Also, Takuma Sato has moved away from where Stingray Rob has signed, Dale Coyne Racing, to drive for Ganassi on the ovals. So we'll see Takuma Sato in a front-running Ganassi car at the Indy 500, which I'm sure is a prospect many people will be looking forward to seeing. If you want to read more about all those stories, head to the-race.com, including some interesting bits about Stingray Rob and where his name comes from and what it has to do with Stirlingshire in Scotland. Aside from all the features and news that you can find on The Race, you can also search The Race Media app on your relevant device to take a look at all the latest stories coming out of motorsport with us. Coming up soon is the Thermal pre-season IndyCar test, so we'll be bringing you all the latest surrounding that. But that's all for this week's The Race IndyCar podcast.
The Athletic.